on his hands and knees, balls heavy, erection huge and flat to his stomach. Then he lunged to his feet, trying to cover himself, his hand a hopelessly inadequate shield. He tried to yank a sheet from the bed, but the black silk was king-sized for acres of bed. Cursing, he began digging among pillows and furs, looking for his clothes, while I tried not to watch, and failed miserably.
Back!
Barons thundered. My heart was pounding. I wanted Barons, not Christian, but the man I wanted was on the other side of the mirror, and this damned half-white, half-black boudoir was ecstasy on steroids, with a shot of adrenaline, and it made things so dreamy and confused. It was the awful sound of Fiona's laughter that broke the spell. I turned to see her standing right next to the mirror, looking up at Barons, her hood down. She spoke the longest sentence she'd said tonight.
How does it feel to want someone more than they want you, Jericho?
Her voice dripped venom.
If she went through that mirror, she belongs to the king. I hope wanting her eats you alive. I hope he takes her from you. I hope you suffer for all eternity.
Baron said nothing.
You should have left me to die where you found me, you bastard,
she said bitterly.
All you did was give me a life that made me want things I couldn't have.
I would have told her it wasn't like that at all. Barons didn't feel that way about me, or about anyone. But before I could say a word, Fiona threw herself at the mirror. I braced myself for her to slam into me. I was that sure I wasn't the Unseelie King. I was ready for the stench of her to assault my nostrils, her mutilated body to slam into mine. I would deflect her toward the bed, where I would stab her and put us all out of her misery, once and for all. Fiona fell over dead the instant she touched the mirror.
Hello, Ms. Concubine.
Barons mocked. Oh, if he only knew. But Christian didn't tell him before we left, and neither did I. Cons. Why I'm not the king. 1. I was a baby 23 years ago. I saw pictures of me, and I remember growing up. Unless someone planted false memories. 2. I don't even like the concubine, unless I fell out of love with her a long time ago. 3. I don't feel like I'm split into multiple human parts, and I've never been attracted to women. Unless I'm repressing. 4. I hate Fae, and especially Unseelie. Am I overcompensating? 5. If I were the king, wouldn't the Unseelie princes have known me and not raped me? Wouldn't somebody recognize me or something? 6. Where have I been for 600,000 or 700,000 years, and how could I not know about it? Okay, so maybe somebody forced me to drink from the cauldron. Pros. Things that make it look like I could be. 1. I knew what the White Mansion looked like inside. I also knew every step I walked in the Unseelie prison. Same with knowing that Cruz had wings. I have a ton of knowledge I can't explain having. Maybe somebody planted memories. If they can plant false ones, why not real ones? 2. I've been dreaming of the concubine all my life, and even though she was unconscious, she managed to summon me. Maybe she was manipulating me in the dreaming like she did the Keltars. 3. I can conjure runes that are supposedly part of what was used to reinforce the Unseelie prison walls. Not sure which column this goes in. Why would the king have helped? Maybe it's part of my She-Seer gifts. 4. The book hunts me and plays with me like a cat worrying a mouse. Can't think of a way out of this one. There's obviously something different about me. 5. Kavruk poked at me mentally, then said, "Ah, there you are." WTF? 6. I can go through the mirror that only the king and concubine can go through, and the queen is the concubine. Barons can't. Fiona couldn't. 7. When I was in the White Mansion, I could see the concubine, but not the king, which makes perfect sense if it was the king's memories I was living, because when you're remembering something, you don't see yourself in the memory. You see who else was there and what happened around you. I dropped my pen and snapped my journal shut. Daddy could have used those last two pros to get me life without parole. I needed to perform more experiments with the silver. That was all there was to it. Once I proved someone else could go through, I could quit driving myself nuts. "Right," I muttered. "More experiments. Sound like someone else we know? Like maybe an obsessed king that had experimented an entire race of monsters into being? There was no getting around a brutal fact. If my tests failed, my test subjects would die. Was I so desperate to exonerate myself that I was willing to become a murderer? Sure, I'd killed a lot in the past few months, but in the heat of the fight, not premeditated. And Fiona had wanted to die. A pure human would be the best test. I could probably find someone hanging out at Chester's who was in love with dying, or too drunk to... Ugh, was I losing my humanity, or had I always been a little short to begin with? I clutched my head and groaned. Suddenly, every muscle in my body tensed as if standing up in greeting, even though I didn't move. Barons. I dropped my hands and raised my head.
Miss Lane.
He took a chair across from me with such eerie grace that I wondered how I'd ever believed he was human. He poured himself into the brocade wing chair, like water over stone, before settling into sleek muscle. He moved as if he knew where everything in the room was, in precise measurements. He didn't walk, stalk, or prowl. He glided with flawless awareness of all other atoms in relation to his. It made it easy for him to conceal himself behind inanimate objects and to assume a similar structure or something. "Have you always moved like that in front of me and I just never noticed? Was I oblivious?"
"No and yes, you were oblivious, head up that tight pink ass. But I never moved this way in front of you."
His look dripped sexual innuendo.
"I might have moved this way a time or two behind you."
"Not hiding anything from me anymore?"
"I wouldn't go that far."
"What does someone like you conceal?"
"Wouldn't you like to know?"
His glittering eyes raked me with a hard once-over. It had been nearly a week since we'd killed Fiona in the Silvers, and my wardrobe was giving me more fits than ever. I was wearing distressed black leather pants with a tattooed gray grunge element, and my favorite baby doll pink tee that said, "I'm a juicy girl," across the front, and had chiffon cap sleeves. I'd tied a goth scarf around my blonde curls and had on a pair of Alina's dangling heart earrings. My fingernails had grown out, and I'd done a French manicure on my hands, but I'd painted my toenails black. The dichotomy didn't end there. I had on a black lace thong and a pink and white striped cotton bra. I was having issues.
"Identity crisis, Ms. Lane."
There was a time when I'd have fired back a pithy retort, but I was drunk on the moment, sitting in my bookstore, sipping hot cocoa, staring across a coffee table at Barons by candle and firelight, with my journal and iPod handy, and the assurance that my parents were well and my world was mostly fine except for my own little personality crisis. Friends and loved ones were safe. Ah, I breathed. So did the people that mattered to me. Life was good. Not long ago, I'd thought I would never step foot in this place again, never see the faint, sexy lift of his lips, that told me he was amused, but still waiting to be really wowed. Never bicker and banter and argue and plan. Never bask in the knowledge that so long as the previous owner of this establishment was alive, this place would stand bastion in far more than mere latitude and longitude, keeping dark zones, fairies and monsters at bay. It was the place of last defense in my heart. Although I hated him for letting me grieve, I couldn't be more grateful that he was unkillable, because it meant I would never have to grieve him again. I could never be broken about Barons. Nothing could hurt me where he was concerned, because he was as certain as the nightfall. He would recur as eternally as the dawn. I still had questions about what he was and concerns about his motives, but they could wait. Time might sort things out in ways pushing and prying never could. I don't have any idea what to wear anymore, so I tried to cover all bases.
Try skin.
Little chilly for that. We looked at each other across the coffee table. His eyes didn't say,
I'd eat you up.
And mine didn't say, what are you waiting for? His didn't reply,
fuck if I'm making the first move.
So I was careful not to say, I wish you would, because I can't, because I'm... And he didn't snap,
choking on your pride.
As if you aren't.
Excuse me.
Really, Barons? I said dryly. I'm not the only one who didn't just not have that conversation, and you know it. There was the faint, sexy lift of his lip.
You're a piece of work, Miss Lane.
Right back at you. He changed the subject.
The Keltar moved their wives and children into Chester's.
When? Our sojourn in the White Mansion had cost us nearly 5 weeks, Dublin time. We'd stopped in the libraries on the way out and taken as many of the Unseelie King's books as we'd been able to wrap up and carry out, along with Fiona's body. I'd not only missed Danny's birthday, I'd missed my own on May 1st. Time sure did fly.
About 3 weeks ago. Long enough that they've settled in. They refuse to leave until we give them the Queen.
Which will be never, I said.
Precisely.
How many kids? I tried to picture Chester's with families living on the cool chrome and glass top floor. Toe-headed tots, carrying blankets and sucking their thumbs, walking along the balustrade. It seemed terribly wrong. And laughably right. Maybe it could eradicate some of the fundamental badassness of the place.
The four Keltar druids brought their wives and children. They breed like it's their personal mission to populate their country in case somebody attacks again, as if anybody wants the bloody place. There were dozens of them everywhere. It was total chaos.
Riordan must be losing his mind. I had to bite my lip not to laugh. Baron sounded downright consternated.
A child followed us on our way to see the Queen. Wanted Riordan to fix a toy or something.
Did he?
He got upset because it wouldn't shut up and tore its head off.
The child? I gasped. He looked at me like I was crazy.
The bear. The battery was dying and the audio file was looping. It was the only way to make it stop.
Or put a new battery in.
Child screamed bloody murder. Army of Keltars came running. I couldn't get out of there fast enough.
I want to see my parents. I mean, visit with them.
Valaine agreed to help the Keltar get Christian out of the Unseelie prison. He has them rebuilding the dolmen at LaRue he crushed for you.
He shot me a look that said, too bad you didn't think before you did that one would have saved time.
He believes that once it's complete he can reestablish the connection and bring him out.
So Valaine was playing nice, batting hard for the team. We had serious unfinished business, but I no longer had his name in my tongue and I suspected he was avoiding me. I'd been in no mood for confrontations in the past week. Confronting myself was hard enough. If you don't arrange it, I'll go by myself. We'd have Christian soon. The moment I'd returned from Fiona's mercy killing, I'd begun lobbying to get Christian out of the Unseelie prison. I would have begun my campaign sooner, but finding out I was not the concubine had thrown me for a wicked, mind-numbing loop. When will he be back?
Your pretty college boy isn't so pretty anymore.
He isn't my pretty college boy. Our gaze is locked. But I still think he's pretty, I said, just to antagonize him.
see you in bed with him like I saw in the Silvers. I'll kill him.
I blinked. I did not just see that in Baron's eyes. He evaporated from the chair and reappeared 5 feet away, standing in front of the fire, his back to me.
They expect to have him back any day now.
I wanted to be there when they got Christian out, but the Keltar had made it clear they didn't want me around. I should never have told them I'd fed their nephew Fae flesh. I wasn't sure if they found it cannibalistic, sacrilegious, or both, but it had certainly offended them. I'd gone light on details about what it had done to him. They'd find out soon enough. I shivered. The time was approaching. We would be doing the ritual soon. We need to have a meeting with everyone. Keltar, She-Seers, Valaine. Iron out the details. What would happen when we finally had the book under lock and key? How did Barons think he was going to use it once it was contained? Did he know the first language? Was he that old? Had he learned it over time or been taught? Did he plan to let us reinter it at the Abbey again, then sit down and read it? And do what with the knowledge? Why don't you just tell me what you want the Shisa to do for? No longer staring into the fire, he faced me. Why do you keep moving like that? You never used to do it before. It was unnerving.
Does it unnerve you?
Not at all. It's just hard to follow. A haze of red slithered through his eyes.
Doesn't faze you at all?
Not a bit. I only want to know what changed. He shrugged.
Concealing my nature requires effort.
But his eyes said,
Think you accepted the beast? Stare at it, day in, day out.
Not a problem.
The queen came to.
She's conscious? I exclaimed.
Briefly, before she went under again.
Why does it always take you so long to tell me the important things?
While the queen was lucid, Jack had the presence of mind to ask her who sealed her in the coffin.
Expectancy straightened my spine. And?
She said it was a Fae prince she'd never seen before. He called himself Kruse.
I stared, stunned. How is that possible? Is anyone who's supposed to be dead actually dead?
Doesn't seem like it.
Did he have wings? He gave me a look.
Why?
Kruse does.
How do you... memories.
Does it bother you? That I'm not the concubine. I couldn't finish the sentence.
No more human than I. On the contrary, you've either lived a very long time or you prove reincarnation. I'd like to know which it is, so we'd know whether you can die. Eventually, the Unseelie King will come looking for you. He and I are overdue for a talk.
What do you want the book for, Barons? He smiled. Well, he showed me his teeth anyway.
One spell, Miss Lane. That's all. Don't worry your pretty little head.
Don't talk down to me. It used to shut me up. Doesn't work anymore. A spell for what? To change you back to whatever you were before? To let you die? His eyes narrowed, and the rattlesnake stirred in his chest. He looked at my face closely, as if reading the tiniest nuances of the way my nostrils flared on each breath, the shape of my mouth, the movement of my eyes. I raised a brow, waiting.
Is that what you need to think of me? That I want to die? Must you dress me up in chivalry to find me palatable? Chivalry demands a suicidal bent. I don't have one. I can't get enough of life. I get off on waking up every day for infinity. I like being what I am. I got the best end of the deal. I'll be here while it's happening. I'll be here when it ends. And I'll stand up from the ashes and do it all over when it begins again.
You said somebody beat me to damning you.
Melodrama. Did it curry favor? You kissed me.
You don't feel damned.
God said, let there be light. I said, say please.
He was gone, no longer standing in front of me. The bookstore seemed empty, and I looked around, wondering where he'd gone so quickly, and why. Had he melted up against a bookcase, faded into a drape, wrapped himself around a pillar? Suddenly there was a fist in my hair, behind me, pulling my head back, arching my spine up from the sofa. He closed his mouth over mine and pushed his tongue in, forcing my teeth wide. I grabbed his arm, but as sharply as he had my head pulled back, all I could do was steady myself. He wrapped his other hand around my neck, forcing my chin higher, kissing me more deeply, harder, keeping me from resisting. Not that I wanted to. Heart slamming in my chest, my legs moved apart. There are different kinds of kisses. I'd thought I'd experienced them all, if not prior to coming to Dublin, certainly after months of being Priya in bed with this man. This was a new one. All I could do was hold onto his arm and survive. Kiss wasn't the right word at all. He fused us together, my jaws so wide I couldn't even kiss him back. I could only take what he was doing to me. I felt the sharp slide of fangs over my tongue as he sucked it into his mouth. I knew then, as he'd never let me see in our bed in that basement, that he was far more animal than man. Maybe he hadn't always been, but he was now. Maybe long ago in the beginning he'd missed being a man, if in fact he'd been one to begin with. But he didn't anymore. He'd gone native. I was kind of astonished by it. What a man he'd chosen to be. He could easily have gone feral. He was the strongest, fastest, smartest, most powerful creature I'd ever seen. He could kill everything and everyone, including Faye. He could never be killed. Yet he walked upright and lived in Dublin, and he had a bookstore and great cars and collected rare things of beauty. He bitched when his rugs got burned and got pissy when somebody messed with his clothes. He took care of some people, whether he seemed to like doing it or not. And he had a sense of honor that wasn't animal.
Honor is animal. Animals are pure. People are fucked up. Quit fucking thinking.
He let go of my mouth long enough to speak. Then I couldn't breathe again. I didn't play nice. I wasn't feeling nice. I was plastered at an awkward angle against the couch, completely in his control, unless I wanted to try to break my own neck to get free. I wanted to know what spell he wanted, though, so I drew in on myself and volleyed into his head.
Crimson silk sheets. I'm in her, and she's looking at me like I'm her world. The woman undoes me.
I flinch. I'm having sex with me, seeing myself from his eyes. I look incredible naked. Is that how he sees me? He doesn't see any of my flaws. I've never looked half as good to myself. I want to pull out. It feels perverse. I'm fascinated. But this was not what I was hunting for at all.
Where are the handcuffs? Grab her fucking head. She's going down on me again. She'll make me come. Tie her up. Is she back? How much longer do I have?
He senses me there.
Get out of my head!
I deepen the kiss, bite his tongue, and he is violent with lust. I take advantage, diving deep. There's a thought he's shielding. I want it.
Nobody home, but she for whom I am the world. Can't go on like this. Can't keep doing it.
Why couldn't he go on? What couldn't he keep doing? I'm having sex with him, any way he wants me, while I stare up at him with utter worship. Where was the problem there? Weariness suddenly crashes over me. I'm in his body, and I'm coming beneath him, and I'm checking my eyes warily.
What the fuck am I doing here?
He knew what he was, what I was. He knew we came from different worlds, didn't belong together. Yet for a few months there'd been no lines of demarcation between us. We'd existed in a place beyond definitions, where no rules had mattered, and I wasn't the only one who'd reveled in it. But the entire time I'd been lost in sexual bliss, he'd been aware of time passing, of everything that was happening, that I was mindless, I wasn't willing, and when I snapped out of it, I'd blame him.
Keep hoping to see the light in her eyes. Even knowing it'll mean she's saying goodbye.
I had. Irrational or not, I'd held it against him. He'd seen me naked, body and soul, and I hadn't seen him at all. I'd been blinded by helpless lust that hadn't been for him. I had been lust, and he'd been there.
Just One time.
He's thinking as we watch my glazed eyes go even emptier. One time what? Instead of pushing, I try a stealth attack. I pretend to retreat, let him think he's won, and at the last minute turn around. Instead of lunging for his thoughts, I stay very, very still and listen. He pushes my hair out of my face. I look like an animal. There's no sentience in my gaze. I'm a cave woman with a minuscule prehistoric brain.
When you know who I am, let me be your man.
He blasts me from his skull with such force that I nearly pass out. My ears ring and my head hurts. I'm sucking air. He's gone. Thirty-four. I walked through Temple Bar with a spring in my step. I'd woken early, taken one look at the sunshine shafting in through my bedroom window, dressed and headed out to run errands. The fridge was empty. I had two birthdays I was determined to celebrate before they got any more belated, and I was going to have to do some serious improvising with ingredients to bake a cake. Since Halloween, butter, eggs, and milk were a scarce commodity. But a southern woman could do a lot with shortening condensed milk and powdered eggs. I was going to bake a chocolate cake with thick, creamy, double chocolate fudge icing if it was the last thing I did. Danny and I would watch movies and paint our fingernails. It would be like old times with Alina. I turned my face up to the sun as I hurried down the street. After what seemed an interminable hiatus, spring had returned to Dublin. The season of sunshine and rebirth was overdue for me. Though I'd managed to avoid miserable months of cold weather, busy in Fairy or the Silvers, it had still been the longest winter of my life. Spring didn't look any different than winter, but you could feel it in the air, the kiss of warmth on the breeze, the scent blowing off the ocean that carried the promise of buds and blossoms, if not here, somewhere else in the world. I'd never thought I'd miss flies and insects, but I did. There wasn't a single thing growing in Dublin. And that meant no moths, butterflies, birds, or bees. Not a single flower bloomed. No shoots pushed out from young limbs. Not a blade of grass grew. The shades had decimated the city on their way out, before slamming the door shut with a bang last Halloween. The soil was barren. I was no horticulturalist, but I'd been doing some research. I was pretty sure if we reintroduced the right nutrients into the soil, in time we'd be able to grow things again. We had a lot to reclaim, trees to remove and replace, planters and flower boxes to fill, parks to redesign. I planned to start small, haul dirt back from the abbey, grow a few daisies, buttercups, maybe some petunias and impatiens, fill my bookstore with ferns and spider plants and begin taking back the night in my own space before spilling over onto the rooftop garden and beyond. One day Dublin would live and breathe again. One day, all these husks of what had once been people would be swept up and buried in a memorial ceremony. One day, tourists would come to see Ground Zero and reminisce about the Halloween when the walls fell, maybe even mention in passing a girl who'd cowered in a belfry before helping save the day, then head off to one of 600 newly restored pubs to celebrate that the human race had taken back what was theirs. Because we would. No matter who or what I was determined to capture and reinter the book, then get to work figuring out a way to put the walls back up. Along the way, I'd find proof that I wasn't the king, just a human woman with a lot of memories someone else had planted for reasons that would make sense when I finally knew them. I wasn't the fulcrum of a prophecy that would either save or doom the human race. I was merely the person who'd been pre-programmed by the queen, or who knew. Maybe the king to track the book in case it escaped, just like the Keltar had been manipulated, one small part of the equation for sealing it away again, forever this time. As I sauntered through the morning, I tried to slip back into the mind of the young woman who'd stepped off the plane, taken a cab through Temple Bar, and checked into the Clarin House late last summer, bemused by the thick accent of the leprechaun-like old man behind the reservations desk. Starving, scared, and grieving. Dublin had been so huge, and I'd been so small and clueless. I looked around, absorbing the silent shell of a city, remembering the hustle and bustle. The streets had been crammed with Craig, vibrant life that took itself entirely for granted.
Morning, Miss Lane.
Inspector Jane moved into step with me. I assessed him quickly. He wore tight, khaki-colored jeans with a plain white T-shirt stretched over his barrel chest and military boots laced up outside his pants. He was draped in ammo, pistols in his waistband and arm holster, Uzi over his shoulder. No place for an evil book to hide. Months ago, he'd had the start of a paunch. It was no longer there. He was rangy with muscle, long-limbed and walking like a man who had his feet planted firmly on the ground for the first time in years. I smiled, genuinely pleased to see him, but it was all I could do not to reach for my spear. I hoped he wasn't still after it or holding grudges.
Fine morning, isn't it?
I laughed. I was thinking the same thing. Is there something wrong with us? Dublin's a shell, and we look ready to burst into a cheery whistle. The unsealy-spiked tea-drinking inspector and I had certainly come a long way.
No paperwork. I used to hate paperwork. Didn't know how much of my life it was eaten up.
New world.
Bloody strange one.
But good.
Aye. The streets are quiet. Books laying low. Haven't seen a hunter in days. We Irish know to make the most of the times of plenty, for sure enough there'll be famine again. Made love to my wife last night. Children are healthy and strong. It's a good day to be alive,
he said matter-of-factly. I nodded in complete understanding. Speaking of hunters, you'll be seeing at least one in the skies soon. I filled him in on the outline of our plan, that I would be scouring the streets by hunter, looking for the Shisadu. So don't shoot me down, okay? His eyes narrowed shrewdly.
How do you control it? Can you force it to take you to its lair? We could wipe out the lot of them if we could only find the den.
Let's get the book off the streets first. Then we'll help you hunt, I promise.
A promise I'll be holding you to. I don't like using the girl, but she insists. That one's had a hard enough life. She should be home. Somebody watching out for her. Kills like she was born to it. Makes me wonder how long she's been...
Michaela,
Fulane said. Jane was frozen, mouth ajar mid-step. Not iced, just immobilized. I stiffened and reached for my spear.
We need to talk.
Understatement. You need to explain. I spun in a circle, spear up. For whatever reason, I still had it.
Sheathe the spear.
Why haven't you taken it?
I offer you a show of good faith.
Where are you? I demanded. I could hear his voice, but he wasn't visible, and the source of his voice kept moving.
I will appear when you have given me your show of good faith.
Which is?
I choose to let you keep it. You choose to sheathe it. We will honor each other with trust and confidence.
Not a chance in hell.
I am not the only one that has some explaining to do. How did you bring the queen out through the king's mirror?
Let me tell you what I don't understand. Last Halloween, I got raped by unseelie princes. You told me you were busy carrying your queen to safety on human feet. But now I know the queen had been in the unseelie prison for... How did you word it? Many human years? Where were you really that night, Valaine? He materialized in front of me, a dozen feet away.
I did not lie to you. Not entirely. I told you I could not be in two places at once, and that much was true. However, I misspoke when I said I was carrying my queen to safety. Instead, I was taking advantage of those hours, searching for her in Derrock's silvers. I was certain he was behind her disappearance. I believed he had imprisoned her in one of the stolen mirrors at LaRue. But I could not search those silvers until the magic of the realms was neutralized. When I crushed his dolmen for you, which we rebuilt and I succeeded in retrieving Christian only last night, or I would have come to explain myself sooner, I endeavored to search them then. But Derrock had learned much from journals stolen from the White Mansion, and I was unable to break his wards.
You spent the night I was getting raped searching his house and finding nothing?
A regrettable decision, only because it did not yield fruit. I was certain she was there. If she had been, it would have been worth it. As it was, when I discovered what had transpired, I felt...
He lowered his lids over his eyes, leaving only a thin band of silver glittering beneath his lashes.
I felt
His mouth shaped a bitter smile.
It was untenable. Fae do not feel. Certainly not the Queen's first prince. I tasted envy of my dark brethren for knowing you in a way I never would. I choked on rage that they harmed you. I grieved the loss of something of incomparable measure I could never have again. Is that not human regret? I felt...
He inhaled slow and deep, then blew it out.
Shame.
So you say. The smile twisted.
For the first time in my existence, I wanted to experience a temporary oblivion. I was unable to make my thoughts obey me. They wandered of their own accord to matters that were hellish to suffer. I was unable to make them stop. It made me want to stop. Is that love, Michaela? Is that what it does to you? Why, then, do humans long for it?
I jerked, remembering a moment when I'd considered stretching on the ground next to Barron's and bleeding out next to him.
I am tired of being in impossible positions. For an eternity, my first allegiance has been to my queen. Without her, my race is doomed. There is no successor to her throne. There is none worthy or capable of leading my people. I could not choose to help you over attempting to recover her. My emotions, to which I had no right, could not be permitted to interfere. For too long I have been all that stands between peace and war.
He locked gazes with me.
Unless...
Unless what?
Still you point that spear at me.
I stalked toward him, drawing my spear arm back. He vanished. He spoke behind me.
Could it be you are becoming like us?
I whirled, eyes narrowed. What do you mean?
Are you becoming Fae, in the way some long ago were born? I suspect the young druid also suffers birth pains. It is a most unexpected development.
And unwelcome.
That remains to be seen.
Was that his breath at my ear, his lips against my hair? It's unwelcome to me. I'm not going to become one of you. Get it out, I don't want it. I felt his hands on my waist, sliding lower over my ass.
Immortality is a gift, princess.
I'm not a princess, and I'm not turning Fae.
Not yet, perhaps. But you are something, are you not? I wonder what. I weary of watching barons piss circles around you. I tire of waiting for the day you will finally look at me and see that I am so much more than a Fae and a prince. I am a male, with hunger for you that knows no bottom. You and I, more than anyone else in the universe, are perfect for each other.
He was half a dozen feet away, facing me, looking down into my eyes.
I do not wish to continue like this. I am divided and know no peace. Pride has prevented me from speaking plainly. No more.
He vanished and reappeared right in front of me, so close I could see a shimmer of rainbows in his iridescent eyes. The spear was between us. I tightened my hand on the hilt. He closed his over mine, pointed the spear at his chest and leaned into me. I could feel him, rock hard and ready against me. He was breathing fast and shallow, eyes glittering.
Accept me, or kill me, Michaela. But choose. Just fucking choose.
The last time I talked with my mom in person was on August 2nd, the day I said goodbye and caught a plane for Dublin. We'd fought bitterly about my going to Ireland. She hadn't wanted to lose a second daughter to what she'd called that cursed place. At the time, I thought she was being melodramatic. Now I know she had reason to believe she should never have let Alina go and was terrified to see me follow. I've hated that our last words spoken face to face were harsh. Although I've spoken to her on the phone since then, it's not the same. I saw Daddy 3 weeks later when he came to BB&B looking for me. Barron's voiced him to make him go home and planted subliminal commands to prevent him from returning to Ireland. They worked. Daddy went to the airport several times to come back for me, but couldn't make himself get on a plane. I saw them both again 2 weeks after Christmas, when I surfaced from being Priya, and Valaine had taken me to Ashford to show me that he'd helped restore my hometown and was keeping my folks safe. I hadn't talked to them then. I'd crouched in the bushes behind my house and watched them on the lanai, talking about me and how I was supposedly going to doom the world. I'd seen them both when Darok was holding them captive. They'd been gagged and bound. Then I'd seen them here at Chester's, on the night the Shisadu took control of Fade and killed Barons and Riordan. But that was only through a glass pane. Chronologically, it had been 9 months since they'd seen me. With the time I'd lost in Faerie, being Priya and in the Silvers, it felt more like 3 months to me, albeit the longest, most crammed full 3 months of my life. I wanted to see them, now. Although I hadn't accepted Valaine the way he'd wanted me to, I hadn't stabbed him either, which turned out to be fortuitous, because he'd finally gotten around to telling me that we were all supposed to meet at Chester's today at noon to iron out our plans to capture the book. He'd been dispatched as a sifting messenger to round everyone up. I decided my errands could wait. Knowing that we were so close to making a serious attempt at capturing the book had filled me with urgency to see Mom and Dad before the big meeting. Before the ritual, before anything else in my life could go wrong. Personal identity crisis aside, they were my parents, and always would be. If I'd lived before as someone or something else, that life had paled in comparison to this one. I blasted into Chester's, sailed coolly through the bars, which were depressingly packed so early in the day, and headed for the stairs. I had no desire to talk to any of the cryptic denizens of the club. At the foot of the stairs, Lore and a massively muscled man with long white hair, pale skin, and burning eyes moved together, blocking my way. I was debating what I might have in my deep, glassy lake to use. Barons had slurped down my crimson runes like truffles, when Riordan called down.
Let her up.
I tipped my head back. The urbane owner of the largest den of sex, drugs, and exotic thrills in the city stood behind the chrome balustrade, big hands closed on the chrome railing, thick wrists cuffed by silver, features darkened by a convenient shadow. He looked like a scarred Gucci model. Whatever kind of life these men had lived before they'd become whatever they were, it had been violent and hard, like them.
Why?
Lore demanded.
I said so. Not time for the meeting yet. She wants to see her parents. She's going to insist. So? She thinks she has something to prove. She's feeling pushy.
Gee, this is nice. I don't even have to talk, I purred. I was feeling pushy. Riordan brought out the worst in me. Like Rowena, he prejudged me.
You ooze emotion today. Emotional humans are unpredictable, and you're more unpredictable than most to begin with. Besides...
Riordan sounded amused.
Jack's building up immunity to Baron's voice. He's been demanding to see you. Said he'll take the Queen hostage if we don't bring you to him. I don't worry about the Queen's safety. Rainey likes her, and Jack likes anything Rainey likes. But I have concerns he might debate us to death.
I smiled faintly. If anyone could win, it was my daddy. I pushed past Lore, clipping him with my shoulder. His arm shot out like a bar across my neck and stopped me.
Look at me, woman,
Lore growled. I turned my head and met his gaze coolly.
If he tells you anything about us, we'll kill you. Do you understand that? One word, you die. So if you're walking around feeling cocky and protected because Barons likes to fuck you, think again. The more he likes to do you, the more likely it is that one of us will kill you.
I looked up at Riordan. The owner of Chester's nodded. Nobody killed Fiona.
She was a doormat.
I pushed the arm away from my neck. Get out of my way.
I would suggest you cure him of his little problem if you want to survive.
Lore said. Oh, I'll survive.
The farther away from him you get, the safer you are.
Do you want me to find the book or not? Riordan answered.
We don't give a fuck if the book is out there. Or that the walls are down. Times change, we go on.
Then why are you helping with the ritual? Valaine said Barons asked you and Lore to handle the other stones.
For Barons,
But if he breathes one word about himself, you're dead.
I thought he was the boss of you guys.
He is. He made the rules we live by. We'll still take you from him.
Take you from him? Sometimes I was so dense. And he knows that.
We've had to do it before,
Lore said.
Castillo hasn't said a word to us since. I say, get over it already. It's been 1,000 fucking years. What's a woman worth?
I inhaled slow and deep as the full ramifications of what they just told me sunk in. This was why Barons never answered any of my questions, and never would. He knew what they would do to me if he told me, whatever they'd done to Castillo's woman 1,000 years ago. You don't need to worry about it. He hasn't told me anything.
Yet,
Lore said. But more importantly, I said, looking up at Riordan, I won't ask. I don't need to know. I realized it was true. I was no longer obsessed with having a name and an explanation for Jericho Barons. He was what he was. No name, no reasons would alter anything about him, or how I felt.
So every woman is sent at some point. Are you familiar with the tale of Bluebeard?
Sure. He'd asked only one thing of his wives, that they never look in the forbidden room upstairs, where he kept the bodies of all the wives before them, whom he'd killed for looking in the forbidden room upstairs. Bluebeard's wives didn't have a life. I studied him. They were all so controlled, so hard and ruthless. How many have you taken from one another? So many that you hate the sight of one another? Has the merry band of brothers become a walking, talking, immortal Cold War? His face hardened.
Strip if you're coming up.
I gave him a look. I have on skin-tight clothes.
Non-negotiable, all of it, nothing but skin.
Lore folded his arms, leaned back against the staircase, and laughed.
She's got a great ass. If we're lucky, she's wearing a thong.
The white-haired man rumbled with laughter. You've never made anyone strip before, I said.
New rules.
Riordan smiled. I'm not...
Seeing your parents if you don't.
He cut me off. I don't want to see them if I have to be naked. My mother would never recover. He held up a short robe. You planned this. The prick.
Told you. New rules. Can't be too careful with the queen here.
He didn't think I'd do it. He was wrong. Bristling, I kicked off my shoes, tugged my shirt over my head, skinned off my jeans, popped my bra, and stripped off my thong. Then I put my shoulder holster back on, tucked my spear into it, and walked up the stairs, naked. I put a little jiggle in my walk and held his gaze the whole time. At the top, Riordan practically accosted me with the short robe. I looked back at Lore and the other guard. They were both staring at me. Neither of them was laughing anymore. The second floor of Chester's smelled good. I cocked my head, sniffing. Perfume and cooking? Was there a kitchen up here? Three women popped out of a wall, talking and laughing, carrying covered dishes, then vanished behind another hissing panel. I was piqued. They knew how to open and close the doors, and I didn't. Riordan thrust my clothes at me.
The Keltar women are out of control. They cook, they chatter, they laugh. Idiots.
I looked at him. He was already stalking away. It was all I could do not to laugh. I stepped to the side of the hall and dressed as I watched him disappear into one of the glass-paneled rooms. When I began walking again, Lore moved into step beside me. I didn't like the way he was looking at me, with the hot, fixed gaze of an intensely sexual man who'd seen me naked and jiggling and wasn't about to forget it soon.
Jack and Rainier down here.
He turned left in the honeycomb of glass and chrome down a hallway I hadn't even realized was there. The reflective glass walls created a hall of mirrors illusion. Chester's was even larger on the second floor than I'd thought. You moved them.
Needed a place we could ward better with the queen here.
Ahead, Drustin and Dagus were standing in the hallway talking to a... I stared. Fae? I wasn't getting a Fae read off him. What was he? Long black hair, gold dust skin, loads of charisma. Fae, but not Fay. As we approached, I heard Dagus say impatiently,
"All we're asking is that you confirm she's truly a Veal. You were her favorite for 5,000 years, Adam. You know her better than any of us. She's wasted and weak, and though we're fair certain it's her, we'd be resting easier if we heard it from one who was once her right hand. I'm mortal. Gav's pregnant, and I'm not dying in a bloody Fey war. This isn't my battle. This isn't my life anymore. We're only asking you confirm it's her. We'll have Valaine sift you out of here. You tell that fuck I'm here, you won't get a thing from me. No one is to know I'm in Ireland, not a single Fey. Got it? You believe they'd still hunt you? They have long memories. The Queen is weak, and I was never their favorite. Some of them don't drink from the cauldron as often as I'd like. One look, I'll confirm it for you. But then I'm out of here. Don't come looking for me again.
Dagus said coolly,
You had the chance to kill Darok. You made him mortal instead.
Adam's dark eyes glittered.
I knew one of you bastards would try to blame me for what happened. I let him live. Humans let Hitler live. I'm not responsible for the destruction of a third of the world's population.
Be damned glad none of the casualties were Keltar, or we'd be hunting you ourselves.
Don't threaten me, Highlander. I wasn't called the Sincerec Dhu for nothing, and I didn't go native without taking precautions. I still have a few tricks up my sleeve. I've got my own clan to protect.
I stared at him as we passed. Suddenly his head whipped around and he stared straight back at me, eyes narrowed. His gaze followed me until I'd passed.
Who's she?
I heard him ask.
One of the Queen's chosen, it seems. She can track the book.
I bet she can,
Adam murmured. I looked sharply over my shoulder and began to turn around. I wanted to know why he'd said that. Lore's hand clamped around my arm.
Keep walking. Visiting hours at Chester's. Well, for you, there aren't any.
He stopped at the far end of the hall in front of a smooth wall of glass that was heavily painted with smoky runes and pressed his palm to the panel. As the door slid aside, I looked down and saw that the floor was covered with more runes.
If you tire of barons,
his cold eyes fixed on my face,
assuming you survive,
I shot him a look of mock astonishment. Will wonders never cease? Laura's idea of a proposition. Somebody catch me while I swoon.
Charm takes energy better spent fucking. I prefer a club over the head.
He turned and began to walk away. I rolled my eyes and, squaring my shoulders, stepped over the runes. Or rather, I tried to step over the runes. They repelled me violently, and every alarm in the building went off. I'm not carrying the book. You saw me naked. Get off me. Lore's arm was around my throat, crushing my windpipe. A bit more pressure and I'd pass out from lack of oxygen.
What happened?
Riordan demanded, storming up.
She tripped the wards. Why is that, I wonder, Mac?
Get this prick off me, I said.
Let her go.
Barons had joined Riordan in the hall.
Now.
Riordan looked at Barons and something passed between them, and I realized they'd been expecting this. They'd known at some point I would demand to see my parents. The only reason Riordan had let me up was to subject me to this test. But what had it proved?
Doesn't change anything,
Baron said finally.
No,
Riordan agreed. What? I demanded.
The wards recognize you as Fey,
Baron said. Impossible. We all know I'm not. It must be picking up that I've eaten Fey.
You've eaten Fey?
Adam sounded disgusted.
Do you recognize her? You looked at her oddly when she passed,
Lore said.
Only that she's Fey-touched,
Adam replied.
Somewhere in her bloodline. Royal. Don't know the house, not mine.
They were all staring at me. You guys should talk. None of you is human. Well, maybe Kian and Drustin, but there's that whole chosen-by-the-queen, trained-as-her-druids thing. So don't be staring at me like I'm the freak du jour. Maybe any she-seer would set it off. Supposedly the UK had a hand in making us. I never set off the alarms at the Abbey that were designed to keep Fay out. Or had I? Each time I'd gone there, I'd been found remarkably quickly. Then there was the blonde woman who'd barred the corridor with her implacable, "You are not permitted here. You are not one of us." What wasn't I? A she-seer? A Haven member? A human? "I want to see my parents," I said coolly. Barons and Riordan exchanged a look again. Then Riordan shrugged.
"Let her. Set them up in the room next door." "Mac!"
Jack exclaimed, rushing me the moment I stepped in the door.
"Oh, God. We've missed you, baby."
I disappeared into a bear hug that smelled of peppermint and aftershave. They say scent is the strongest memory association we possess. The smell of my daddy's hug peeled away the months like calendar pages tossed into a trash can. I wasn't Fay. I wasn't possibly the unseelie king. I wasn't going to doom the world. I was safe, protected, right, loved. I was his little girl. Always would be. "Daddy," I pressed my nose to his shirt. "And Mom," I choked out, burying my face in her shoulder. The three of us clung to one another, hugging like there was no tomorrow. I pulled back and looked at them. Jack Lane was tall, handsome, and composed as ever. Rainey was smiling radiantly. "You guys look fantastic. And Mom, look at you." There was no trace of grief or fear in her gently lined face. Her eyes were clear, her fine features glowing.
"Doesn't she look great?"
Jack said, giving her hand a squeeze.
"Your mom's a changed woman."
"What happened?" Rainey laughed. "Living in a glass room with the Queen of Fairies might have something to do with it. Then there's the music coming up through the floors at all hours. And let's not forget all the naked people dropping by." Dad growled. I smiled. I wondered how my parents were handling that. Mom was getting a crash course in bizarreness. "Welcome to Dublin," I told her. "Not that we've gotten to see much of it." She shot a pointed look at the glass, as if she knew exactly where Riordan was standing. "Any time now would be nice." She glanced back at me. "Don't get me wrong. I had a difficult time when we first got here. Your father had his hands full. But one morning I woke up, and it was as if all my fears had melted away while I slept. They never came back. Because so much was weird that fear didn't have any place anymore?" I asked. "Exactly. None of the rules that I'd lived by for so long applied. Things were so far outside my box, I had to either go crazy or throw the box away. I'm excited to be alive in a way I haven't felt since you girls were little, since before I began to worry about you and your sister all the time. Now the only thing I've been worried about was when I might get to see you again. And here you are, and you look amazing, and, Mac, I love your hair. The shorter look is perfect on you. But you've lost weight, honey. Too much. Are you eating?" "I don't think you're eating. You can't be eating enough and be so thin. What did you have for breakfast?" she demanded. I looked at Daddy and shook my head. "Is she still making cheese grits and pork chops for breakfast? Are they letting her in the kitchen here?"
"Lore sneaks her in every now and then."
"Lore?"
"He likes her hoe cakes."
I blinked. Lore snuck my mother into the kitchen to make hoe cakes? "Your Barons prefers my apple pie," Rainey said, beaming. "He's not my Barons, and there's no way that man eats apple pie." Barons and apple pie were as wrong together as, well, vampires and puppies. It was hard to even hold them in the same thought. But no ice cream. He hates ice cream. My mother knew more about Barons' eating habits than I did. Unless one counted all the animal scraps he'd left when he was in beast form. I knew he didn't like the paws, and the only bones he chewed on were marrow-filled. The hearts were always gone, even if he ate nothing else.
"I hear they plan to try the ritual soon,"
Jack said. Do they tell you guys everything? I said, exasperated. They trusted my parents, but not me. That was just wrong.
The Keltar men talk, Rainey said. Their wives visit.
And we might pry a little.
Daddy winked. I wondered how long it would take the Keltar wives to realize all that flattering, focused attention Jack Lane could turn on at the drop of a hat that made you feel like the most special and interesting person in the world was a cover for his interrogations. That he was methodically turning them inside out, looking for admissible and non-admissible evidence. He'd pulled more confessions out of his charmed, disarmed prey than any attorney in Ashford and the surrounding nine counties. Speaking of talk, I said, I have a confession to make.
You came to see us in January, but you didn't stay, Rainey said.
We know. You left us a picture of Elena. We were surprised you put it in the mailbox.
We might never have looked there.
We found it only because your father went after a nest of wasps that had taken up residence in the milk can that holds the post. The simplest things elude me. Ugh, duh, there's no mail running.
They kept it up for a while, but too many postal workers were getting killed in those dimensional shifts, or attacked by Unseelie. Nobody's willing to run the routes,
Jack said.
We found it the day that man came and abducted us, Rainey said.
That's not when I left it, though. I looked at Daddy. I was there one night when you and Mom were out back on the lanai, talking about me. Jack searched my eyes, left to right, rapidly.
I think I remember that night.
You and Mom were talking about how there were things you guys had never told me. That was nice and innocuous. I knew Riordan and Barons were outside, listening to every word we said. I wanted to know about the prophecy, but not enough to ask up front. Considering I'd just set off the wards, I was worried that if we said anything about me dooming the world, I'd get shut out of the ritual. And I needed to be there. I wasn't going to be excluded from the big showdown. I had a part to play, a good, wholesome part. All I had to do was fly the hunter and point at the evil book.
Yes,
Jack said, watching me.
We were. You always think of things you'd wished you'd said when you're afraid you might never get another chance. We weren't sure we'd ever see you again.
Well, here I am, I said brightly.
And we missed you so much, baby,
Jack said. I knew he'd gotten the message. We all got a little teary-eyed then, hugged some more and made small talk. They told me about Ashford, who'd lived and who'd died. They told me the Shades had tried to take over. They'd known only because of the husks. Then the Rhino boys had come, but
that handsome fairy prince who is utterly infatuated with you, and you could certainly do worse than a prince, honey, and you know it. He could protect you and keep you in style and safety,
according to my mom, had arrived and saved my hometown single-handedly. I encouraged her to gush unabashedly about Valaine, hoping it would drive Barons and Riordan away, or at least nuts. The time went much too quickly. Before I knew it, nearly half an hour had passed, and someone was rapping on the glass, barking that it was 11:45 and my time was up. I hugged them both on the way out and got teary-eyed again. I'll be back to see you again as soon as I can. I love you, Mom.
Love you too, honey. Hurry back.
I clung to her for a moment, then turned to Daddy, who wrapped me in a bear hug.
Love you too, Mac.
Against my ear, he whispered.
The crazy woman was Augusta Eau Claire from Devonshire. Had a granddaughter named Telly, she said, helped your mother get the two of you out of the country. You're sunshine and light, baby. There's not a damn thing wrong with you, and don't you ever forget that.
He pulled away and smiled down at me. Love and pride blazed in his eyes. Telly. It was the same name Barons had mentioned in his phone conversation with Riordan the morning after I'd discovered he was alive. He'd wanted to know if Riordan had located Telly yet and instructed him to get more people involved in the search.
Get on with saving the world, baby.
I nodded, lower lip trembling.
I could hunt monsters. I could have sex with men who turned into beasts. I could kill in cold blood. And Daddy could still make me cry just by believing in me.
I won't have her on the ground with us, Rowena was saying 15 minutes later. There's no reason for it. We'll have our radios. She need only fly overhead, spot the book, talk us into position with the stones, then fly off on her demon steed. She shot me a look full of venom that said no she-seer alive would ride a hunter, and there was all the proof she needed of my treason.
The Keltar will chant and carry it to the abbey, where they will teach my girls to reinter it. There is no purpose for her presence.
I snorted. The air was so thick with tension, I was getting lightheaded from lack of oxygen. I'd never stood in a room packed with so much distrust and aggression as I was standing in today. That Riordan had made everyone strip and have their clothes searched before returning them at the top of the stairs had only added to their bad tempers. I knew why he'd done it. It wasn't about new rules. It was about throwing everyone off balance, establishing from the get-go that they weren't in control of anything, not even their person. Being naked in front of clothed guards makes anyone feel intensely vulnerable. I surveyed the room.